As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Athletic Support Summer Edition, Offer Sheet Edition, your podcast on the Montreal Canadiens. I am Marc-Antoine Godin, alongside Arpin Basu on this Sunday, August 29th. Arpin, summer is officially over. I mean, this news with Jesperi Kotkaniemi caught everybody by surprise. Opening thoughts, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, it caught me by surprise. Probably shouldn't have. I mean, let's be honest, like Tom Dundon has been like kind of like jokingly referring to this to various people for like 2 years now. I think most people kind of assumed it was a joke, but obviously not. So, I mean, that's so surprised. I am surprised in the sense that the way the offer sheet was structured, a 1 year deal at $6,100,015 with a $20 signing bonus is obviously meant to be a joke, you know, the 15 being Kotkaniemi's number and the 20 being Aho's number. But that amount of money for 1 year is
that's no joke.
That's no joke. It's uniquely difficult to match. And, you know, I was listening to Elliot Friedman's podcast with Jeff Merrick, the 31 Thoughts podcast, on Saturday night after finishing writing my story at an ungodly hour. And you know, and he brought up the possibility that there is sort of a handshake agreement, that there's an extension in the works, or that there's an extension at a lower number that could come that would incorporate that $6.1 million into the total compensation that Kotkaniemi would get on a long-term deal. But that the one-year offer was made just to make it impossible for the Canadians to match. And I got to say, it's the more I look at the offer sheet, the more it's a really smart thing to do, a smart way to get the player, you know, far smarter than the one that the Canadians threw at Sebastian Aho 2 years ago that kind of triggered this sort of revenge offer sheet. But I just don't, I've been thinking about it, you know, for the last 12 hours or so, more 15 hours. And I just don't see how the Canadians can match it. Because even if they do, I just feel like there's a problem in the relationship between Kotkaniemi and the Canadians that led to him wanting to sign this offer sheet to begin with. And how do you repair that I'm not sure how they do that.
Well, there is. I mean, to a certain extent, he's being offered, you know, something like three times what he would have gotten had he signed a bridge deal with Montreal. So I don't think that there's any hesitation on his part to accept something that's so enticing. And probably that he's perceived by the Carolina Hurricanes as a player who can... they seem to have probably less of a doubt in his abilities and his capability to reach his potential than maybe the Canadians have had since he joined the team, and especially after this season. But the fact, I mean, do you feel it that he wants out? Does it go that far? I mean, I understand that he didn't have always like the best. He didn't probably see eye to eye all the time with Claude Julien and with Dominique Ducharme. As everybody knows, it ended with him being scratched for the last two games of the Stanley Cup Finals. But are we already to the point where the kid, after 3 years in the league at only 21 years old, is ready to say, well, I need a fresh start and I need to change scenery? Are we there?
I mean, is it possible to see it any other way? I mean, I don't know. I don't see it. I don't know what other way
we could just see it as him saying, wait, there's a team that wants to offer me $6 million. How could I say no to this? Which would be perfectly legitimate.
I mean, yes, that is one way of looking at it, but the other way of looking at it, I mean, listen, I look at Braden Point, okay? And last summer, was it last summer?
No, two summers ago.
Two summers ago, actually the same summer that the Canadians offered Sheet Aho, Braden Point, represented by the same agent as Sebastian Aho, Jerry Johansson, was also fielding offer sheets, reportedly and otherwise. I mean, there were teams that were interested in having Braden Point sign an offer sheet, and I'm sure there were some big numbers attached to those offer sheets, and Braden Point said no because he wanted to stay. And
I agree, but it's two different situations. I mean, you got on the one hand, you got Braden Point knowing that his team is like the mother of all Stanley Cup contenders, and history proved them right. They won the two years that followed. It's a different situation than so many of other guys who got. I mean, it's not like there was a huge number of offer sheets thrown at players over the years, but I mean, Shea Weber was, I think, already captain of the Nashville Predators at the time, or became soon after, once it signed an offer sheet with the Philadelphia Flyers. It's not as if it destroyed the relationship between Weber and the Predators. Even Aho himself, he signed with the Canadians, and, well, you could see it as a negotiating ploy because his interest was to stay in Carolina. But the fact is, it did not... I don't think that it damaged the relationship in any way. So my... interrogation. I'm not saying you're wrong, because we've seen like things evolve over time, and there's been some iffiness going on between Kotkaniemi and the Canadians. But I'm not sure if what happened is just a result of a player that says, you know what, I not only am I open to moving on, but I want to move on.
Yeah, I'm sticking with my answer of before. I understand that the Braden Point situation is different, but the principle remains the same. Braden Point wanted to stay in Tampa, so he said, I'm not listening to your offer sheets. I'm staying mm-hmm. in the situation I'm in. Kotkaniemi had the same option. It's not as if this, listen, $6.1 million is a lot of money, and I'm not downplaying that. And yes, it establishes his qualifying offer for the coming years as well. So it does set him up financially. You know, assuming he doesn't sign a long-term extension with the Hurricanes at a lower number, but even if he did, it does settle something. But what I think Kotkaniemi wanted was a team that was belief. Like, I honestly don't think it was just the fact that it was money. It's the contract itself, the offer sheet itself, is designed to make it so the Canadians can't match.
Yeah.
And Kotkaniemi and his agent, Marcus Leto, have to know that. They know that. It's not... You know, as opposed to Sebastian Aho, who saw an offer sheet that the Hurricanes could easily match and that he probably wanted them to match. This is different. When you look at the contract, it's very difficult for the Canadians to match it. And so for him to sign it, just in and of itself suggests a certain desire to leave Montreal, because he knows it's going to be tough for Montreal to match it. And honestly, even if they do, the impact this has on the team, like, they're basically going to have to jettison a contract of some sort at some point.
No, for sure.
In order to absorb this contract into their, so by signing this offer sheet, Jesperi Kotkaniemi has had a detrimental effect on the team. Like, what kind of environment would he be coming back to in this situation? Like, I honestly don't. Listen, I haven't spoken to Jesperi Kotkaniemi. His agent's not taking calls. We don't know what's actually going on in his head. Let's be clear about that. But to me, him signing this offer sheet is just him saying that I don't believe that this team believes in me and that I'm going to get the opportunities here. And I'm ready to move on somewhere else where I might get those opportunities. Maybe he's jumping the gun a little bit, but he's a restricted free agent. The only reason he's a restricted free agent right now is because the Canadians brought him to the NHL at age 18, which has endless debates over that. And we can talk about that later on if you like. But, you know, the Canadians created this situation themselves by A, bringing him to the NHL as quickly as they did, which I didn't disagree with at the time, just to be fair here. And B, with some of the rhetoric that's gone on around Kotkaniemi and his level of play and what they think of him, and you know, Marc Bergevin agonizing over whether he's ready for a second line role and very publicly saying so on the opening of free agency. I don't think, and you know, and obviously with the healthy scratches at the beginning and the end of the playoffs, and just the inconsistency in his role, I Kotkaniemi has his own part to play in that. That, you know, the reason his role was inconsistent was because he himself was inconsistent as a player, and he definitely has to own that. But, you know, I think a lot of the context of this offer sheet is something that was created by the team itself. And frankly, I don't think they saw this coming, even though Dundon had, you know, had not so quietly been joking about it for 2 years. So maybe they should have seen it coming, but there is context to this. And I'm not willing to say that 100% for sure Jesperi Kotkaniemi's number one priority was to leave Montreal, but I got to tell you, my impression is that yes, he wanted out. Like, this is his way out. This is his exit strategy from this situation. And the situation had become such that he no longer wanted to deal with it.
Yeah.
That's my take on it.
Right. You say that he wanted belief. And I think that the Montreal Canadiens will have to show a tremendous amount of belief in him if they want to match that offer. That's what it requires of them, because it's not only about the 6.1 million figure for this season, but it's also what will come next. You know, it's engaging with him for years to come and being open to say, well, we still believe in your potential and we think that maybe not today, but down the road you will be worth that sort of money, and we're willing to go there. But as you pointed out, Marc Bergevin's comments on the eve of free agency suggest that they don't have that belief. There's still plenty of hesitation on their part. So, and you know how Bergevin really doesn't like to, and I think that it's a lesson he's learned probably in part with the signing of Carl Alzner, but generally in the last few years. He's always been very conscious of never overpaying and never go above a certain number that he has in mind for a player. Like, if the guy wants more than we think he's worth, we'll draw a line in the sand. And he's done that for Philippe Danault, and he's done that for a number of other players. And for sure, that the line in the sand is for Kotkaniemi is not $6.1 million. So he would have to, you know, bend his principles and change his point of view, and risking also to jettison all the salary structure of his team, which is another important factor. You add a guy like Kotkaniemi or suddenly earning $6.1 million. What's going to happen next summer when Nick Suzuki wants to sign a new deal? And you wanted room to make some improvements too. Well, all that salary cap room has vanished. And as you mentioned, you'll even have the day that Paul Byron will come out of LTIR, you would have to unload some salary. So there's a trickle effect that involved more than just Kotkaniemi within the Montreal Canadiens. It affects the whole team. But the problem with all that is that what are the alternative for the Canadiens? Because they need Kotkaniemi. So they'll have, if they say, okay, fine, we're just going to take the picks, they have to figure out a way to generate another top nine centerman out of thin air. And so that's going to be quite an exercise. And probably that this is what Marc Bergevin is figuring out during the time that he's allowed to evaluate if they're going to match the offer or not.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, listen, he does have theoretically two first round picks right now, and I guess two third round picks as well. But mainly the two first round picks that he could use to go get a player to replace Kotkaniemi, perhaps. It's the timing of it is awkward just because, you know, training camps are, 3 weeks away. Most of the teams have seemingly done a lot of their business. And so it's, but they're, they do have, like, he does have that week to see if there's a market out there for one or even both of the first round picks to land a player. You know, everyone's talking about Christian Dvorak in Arizona because it's a logical target, seeing as Arizona is desperate to add as many draft picks as possible, which they've done actually an excellent job doing, and also of completely rebuilding their team. Very effective player for them, play center, could come in and replace a Kotkaniemi and at a lower number and signed for several years at that number. I think it's 4.5 or yeah, Somewhere in that vicinity. But, you know, besides him, you know, this week that Marc Bergevin has, the 7 days since Saturday, so till next Saturday, to kind of comb the market, figure out what's going on with and figure out the value of that draft pick if teams, either his own or the Hurricanes, and if teams are interested in sending him a viable, you know, top nine center, I guess is what how the Canadians viewed Kotkaniemi. And so, you know, to have Dano leave and already having no replacement for Dano, and then have Kotkaniemi leave and having no replacement for him, you know, aside from, I guess, Ryan Poehling, who is probably the big winner in this whole thing. He might actually wind up with an opportunity to make this club out of training camp now. But, you know, the Canadians have an issue. They already had an issue at center, and it's only been compounded by the fact that Kotkaniemi signed this offer sheet, and it's going to be extremely difficult for the Canadians to match it. The one thought that crossed my mind as I was writing the piece was, like, last night was, you know, do the Canadians just match it, like, on principle? Like, just being like, we don't care if this, like, totally messes up every, like, just on principle, we're not going to allow a team to come in and take our number three overall draft pick, you know, 3 years into his career this way. Like, we're just not going to let that happen. So we'll figure it out, but we're matching. Like, do you think is there a possibility that that happens?
There's a possibility, but it would not be the right course of action. It would not be, well, if they find a financially sane way to match the offer and say, we got a plan to make it work down the line, it's fine. It's good. But it's just what I'm weary of is the, or worried about is the motivations. You cannot let either just a matter of principle or what would be the word in English for orgueil, you know? Is there ego. An equivalent? Yeah, I guess ego.
Ego, yeah.
You cannot let ego dictate how you're going to proceed and say, well, you know what? We're desperate and we're eager to prove that we made the right choice at number three when we drafted KK in 2018. We're going to stick to it. We're going to show everybody that we were right. We're going to develop the kid right. And in 2-3 years, he's going to become like the top six centerman, at his full potential. And we believe in him. If they sincerely do, that's great. But if it's just to make a point, this is falling into the Hurricanes trap that they're setting up for them. Already, I think that the Hurricanes' motivation in all this is a bit strange, because it seems heavily fueled by a feeling of revenge. You were mentioning how Tom Dundon has referred to it in a wink-wink manner for the past couple of years. It's been in the back of their head for a long time, but it's not without risk for them either. It's a risky proposition. They have to be sure that Kotkaniemi is going to pan out and become the player that they think he's going to be. But if you let revenge and say, you know, just that sort of childish motivation guide you in your decisions, well, it's you might not necessarily have the results that you're hoping for. So on the Canadian side, it might not be revenge, but it would be another not necessarily objective or really thought out process to come with a decision based on ego. It would be a different kind of thing, but I don't think that.
Well, it's not ego. Like, I mean, I understand what I'm saying is principle is different than ego. Like, on principle, like, this is asset management to a certain extent. Like, we're not going to let you take an asset of ours. Like, that's what I meant. It's not that I'm not saying that they would match out of spite necessarily, but that they would match on principle.
Yeah.
I don't think it would be the right course of action either, but there is a possibility that exists that says, hey, we can't allow this to happen. Like, if the Canadian, like,
yeah, but at the same time, the asset management, it cannot be anymore about, okay, Kotkaniemi, the number three pick, or the guy that we invested 3 years in. The asset management is, what is better for us today between having the player as we know him today at $6.1 million a year versus a first and a third? And
yeah,
it's a new analysis, you know, that because we could discuss also how the asset management has been done and led to this, because that's probably one of the main aspects of how this all unfold is how come things led to this. How did we get here?
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Okay, well, let's talk about that. I think we should. Okay, look, so, you know, path A of how we got to this on this day or at this time is the decision in 2018 to have Kotkaniemi start in the NHL at age 18, you know, a few months after his 18th birthday, and on the tail end of what was really an insanely difficult year for Kotkaniemi. He had a lot of hockey in his body when he got to training camp that year. So the fact that he started to fizzle out in January shouldn't have come as much of a surprise and should have been anticipated by the Canadians, because he had gone to U18 World Championships. He had a U20 camp at some point after that, the combine, the draft, development camp, another U20 national team camp, rookie camp, training camp, and then the regular season starting. All of that you know, that was his summer prior to his rookie year. And so, and one thing I do know is that him starting to get benched, Claude Julien, the whole thing about him being tired and Kotkaniemi saying, I'm not tired and this and that, and him getting scratched in LA and benched at the end of game. Like, none of that sat well with Kotkaniemi. He did not like that whole situation, and perfectly normal. He's hardly the first rookie to be scratched or to be benched at the end of games or to be sheltered. He is not the first rookie. He's far from it. And I would venture to say that 98% of rookies that happens to don't like it. So this does not make the situation is not unique. Kotkaniemi's reaction is not unique. The way the Canadiens handled it is not unique either. But, you know, I've always defended the Canadiens and their decision to keep Kotkaniemi because he was so good in that training camp, and that I felt, you know, there was kind of a Carey Price element to what they were doing with Kotkaniemi. You know, the famous Bob Gainey line where he was saying, you know, I wanted to get, what's the term he used? I wanted to give Carey Price some rich games. That's the word he used, rich games, as in terms of experience rich, you know? So wanted Carey Price to get in the starter's net as soon as possible, traded Cristobal Huey in order to make that happen faster. I felt that there was something, an element of that going on with Kotkaniemi that was defendable. Now, obviously in hindsight and in light of this offer sheet being signed and in light of everything that's happened since then, maybe that wasn't the right decision, but you know, I'm not going to criticize the team because I defended them at the time, but it's fair to say now that a lot of what's playing out now is rooted in that decision in the fall of 2018.
Yeah. Well, I think my view on this, and I haven't always thought that way, but I think partly because of the Kotkaniemi situation, but I think that league-wide, I've always, I think it's a little bit dubious to give your spots in the lineup and give your, give spots to players based on performances at training camp. I know some people will say, well, how would you do it any other way? But the thing is, your measuring stick is if you play well during games that don't mean anything for veterans against teams that are partly made of players that won't reach the NHL. If you perform well in those games, we're going to grant you a spot and hope that you're going to be just as effective in March or in April when things really, you know, get a lot more intense, and God forbid during the playoffs, you're going to keep that same effectiveness. And so it's not proper to Kotkaniemi. It's just that as a general rule, I find that there's something that's a little bit broken with that mechanism. And in the Canadiens' case, and in Kotkaniemi's case, let's not forget that when he was drafted, Marc Bergevin was adamant that KK was going back to Finland. There was no...
No, he wasn't. He wasn't.
Oh, he was.
No,
oh,
he yes, wasn't. He said he will come to training camp and his play will determine... He never committed to sending him back to Finland, ever. Go back and check the sound. He did not. He was asked directly many times. He never 100% committed to him going back to Finland. He said he probably will be going back to Finland.
Okay, fine. Yes,
he would. But he probably, never said he would. He never said he was definitely going back. Which I found odd. Okay. I found it strange at the time. Like, I was like, why would you just not? Why would you not say it right now? Like, the fact that he left that window open to me at the time was very weird.
Right. Okay. So he said he will probably go back to Finland. You're right. So, but the fact is, if he did not end up having this job in Montreal out of necessity because Max Domi sucker punched Aaron Ekblad, you know, and was scratched for a few, was suspended for a few games, and it enabled KK to earn a spot and have a much better window to showcase himself during those games. Honestly, if Max Domi is not suspended, maybe it's the course of events is entirely different. But it was based on necessity, and they thought, okay, well, wait a minute. We've got, you know, if the pool of prospects at the time had already been stronger, if the team had been stronger, they would not necessarily have a need to say, well, you know, right now we have a need in center. We just drafted a guy, and boom, he's going to fill in. But that's how things were. They had a need, and he was probably the best candidate to fill in. The same way that Victor Mete at 19 years old ended up being the best candidate to play alongside Shea Weber as a rookie. If they had other and better options, it would have been better to keep him to season him more. So it's a lot of Monday morning quarterbacking. I understand that, but it's not every player, however talented they are ready to make the jump at 18 years old. So and I think we had a proof of that.
Yeah, and I think, you know, and the Mete point is valid as well. And you know, we wrote a piece about this at some point. You know, how they should use Laval as that proving ground and not training camp, based on, you know, these two cases, on Mete and Kotkaniemi, who grew to be great friends and who now presumably are both, well, one's gone for sure, and one might very well be gone within a week. So there is, you know, I think no matter what happens here, there are some lessons that need to be learned, I think, by the Canadiens organization. And one thing that struck me, you know, like how did it get to this point? If we accept the theory right now that by signing this offer sheet, Jesperi Kotkaniemi has expressed his desire to leave Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you should take from this. If you accept that to be true, how did it get to this point with this player and this organization where he is so adamantly wanting to leave? And how can the Canadiens avoid that happening with future young players? And because, listen, Alex Galchenyuk and Jesperi Kotkaniemi are the only two top three picks this team has made since Doug Wickenheiser in 1980. So they're not the same player. They each have their unique issues. I don't think Kotkaniemi really has any issues at all. Galchenyuk had issues, but they're similar in the way that neither of them were put in a situation to succeed, in my opinion. You know, Galchenyuk was a constant source of criticism and just totally harping on the negatives in his game. They haven't quite done that with Kotkaniemi, but they've done it in a different kind of way. It hasn't been as blatant as it was with Galchenyuk, with, you know, where he was openly being criticized by the coach and the GM seemingly at every opportunity. But in Kotkaniemi's case, it's just kind of like, it's sort of in the background, but he'll have a good stretch of games and it'll go away, and then he'll have sort of a less good stretch. But still, the similarity to me is the situation and the expectations that were not met based on the situation that these two kids were put in, both of whom basically made the team coming off the draft. Obviously, there was a lockout in Galchenyuk's case, which allowed him to play, you know, the first half of the season, before making the team out of training camp in January. But still, they both made the team immediately, didn't meet expectations, and ultimately it didn't end well. And so do you think that there's an organizational issue going on here? I mean, again, to be clear, I don't want to compare Galchenyuk and Kotkaniemi as players. I think they're vastly different, but I do think their situations are similar, and that the Canadiens are the common denominator in the two of them.
Well, if you look at the draft picks the Canadiens have had and developed over the years, there's not a ton of success stories in there to say, oh, they were probably developed and the player became 100% of what they were hoping he would become. And I think that the fact that they tried as much as possible last season to put the brakes on the whole Cole Caulfield thing is I think is they're conscious of that they don't want to commit the same mistake as saying, well, we rushed a kid yet again and before he was ready to take on the proper role. We'll see I think that there's a cautionary tale there, but at the same time, they seem to have learned their lesson with Ryan Poehling. Some people say, well, they're taking so much of their time that he's become a bust. He's not a bust. They're just taking their time. And I think that they're doing the right way. But it goes back, in my mind, it goes back a little bit to what I was saying before with rushing an 18-year-old to the NHL. It's because it's as though in both Galchenyuk and Kotkaniemi's cases, It's like, we drafted you because we recognized some tools, but as we play you, we realize that the tools don't fit with the style of play we're hoping you to play. So either ultimately the way that the player was playing before they drafted him was not the one that they were looking for, and then they thought, well, we're gonna mold him into our way of playing, or the player changed his way of playing. But if it's about molding the player, then you should not mold the player too much at the NHL level. People keep saying how it's not a development league and it's just a performance, a results-based league. Well, that molding and that development should be done elsewhere. Because obviously, Jesper Kotkaniemi is more of a freestyle thinker on the ice. He likes to see his options, and he's a great disher. But you hear Marc Bergevin saying how he wants KK to play a north and south style, really a meat and potatoes type of hockey, which probably is not the most inspiring to KK, saying, okay, we're going to dump the puck, chase the puck, and just establish our time in the offensive zone. I think that he wants to be more creative than that. But it's a view between how we perceive you as a player and what we're asking you to do or adapt your game, and there might be a disconnect there. I don't know if it's proper to the Canadians, because I suspect that other teams face that with their prospects every year. I don't think it is proper to the Canadians, but the fact is that since Brendan Gallagher, there have been very few prospects that really panned out where the tools met the way of playing that they were looking for.
Yeah, and that's fair that this is not solely a Canadiens issue, and I didn't mean to imply that. I just think that it is something they're going to need to learn from, no matter what happens here. Like, this is what, you know, even if they match the offer or whatever, or especially if they don't, you know, what went wrong here? How did this happen? And what part did we as a team play in it is something that the Canadiens should be asking themselves if they're being honest with the situation. Listen, you know, I think Kotkaniemi should be asking himself the same question as well. What did I do or not do to make it so that this situation became one where I felt the need to find an out that I didn't, you know, that, because let's be honest, you know, when I mentioned earlier that Kotkaniemi was looking for a team that kind of believed in him, well, you know, I think his belief in the Canadiens has probably waned as well as a result of the various things that have happened, you know, being sent down to Laval and just the last 2 years have not really gone well for him. And so, you know, I'm of the mind that, you know, he's still a very talented player. You know, I don't think he has superstar talent, but he's got, like, you know, star talent, you know, or very, very good player talent. You know, I mean, I still think he can become an effective centerman in the NHL who puts up, you know, a decent amount of offense. I don't think he's ever going to be winning any scoring titles or anything like that, but, you know, put up a second line worthy offense. He still has that in him, but it's, you know, it's a matter of, you know, I don't know what Carolina might do to, like, because the other thing that's curious to me here is, if Kotkaniemi didn't like his situation in Montreal, like, what kind of situation is he going to in Carolina? He's probably going to be a bottom six guy on that team. You know, it's not as if there is this red carpet of opportunity that's going to be rolled out to him on that team. It's a competitive team. They're going to be, you know, fighting for a playoff spot in that division, in the Metropolitan Division, which is, you know, which is competitive right now. You know, there's some up and coming teams, and there's a lot of parity in the league, obviously, in general, but really in that division it's going to be tough.
I don't know what kind of
role he's going to have there. I don't know what they promised him or offered him in terms of role, but so that's another factor. Like, I mean, if he had accepted an offer sheet with a team where, you know, he's going to be handed a second line center role on day one and be given this contract, I'd be like, okay, well, that kind of makes some sense. But, you know, similar to the way I felt about Philip Deneau signing with the Kings, where he wasn't sure about his role in Montreal with, ironically enough, Kotkaniemi and Suzuki kind of ascending. But and then going to a team in the Kings that have Quentin Byfield and Alex Turcotte coming up the ranks and coming fast, where he'll be probably in a similar situation with Andrei Kopitar kind of locked into, you know, at minimum a top six role, if not a top line role, for the next few years. You know, it just makes it even more, it just creates more questions from me of what happened to this relationship when Kotkaniemi decides to leave the situation he has in Montreal, where he was probably going to be given an opportunity to fight, you know, to earn a second line center role in training camp. Like that's how that's how it was playing out. Like he was finally getting his chance, and at this moment decides to go to a team where he probably won't get that chance. So seems to me like it reflects a deterioration of the relationship even more so.
Yeah, that's an interesting perspective. Because in Carolina, I mean, Aho's obviously the bona fide number one center. But Vincent Trocheck, who's entering the last year of his deal, he had 43 points in 47 games. He had a tremendous season for them. Mm-hmm. They're not going to bring Trocheck down the lineup just to insert KK there. So KK is probably going to bump Jordan Staal to fourth line duties. But if they're going to keep Kotkaniemi at center, it looks as though he's going to be a third line center, at least for this season. The Hurricanes were looking for a goal scorer. They were looking for goals. The rumors were tying them to Vladimir Tarasenko.
Yes.
Ultimately they turned to Kotkaniemi. Our colleague Pierre Lebrun mentioned last night that the Hurricanes actually came forward to the Canadiens and looked into trading for Kotkaniemi before they placed that offer sheet. So obviously for the Canadiens, it must not have been an entire surprise, because there was like a flag, you know, a warning sign there saying, you know what, we haven't forgotten about Kotkaniemi. We're still interested in the player. Can we make it work? It did not work. And now he's got an offer sheet from them. But does he fit exactly the profile of what they're looking for, what they need? That's, to me, if I'm looking for a goal scorer and I have Aho and Trocheck in my center line already, I'm not sure I would spend $6 million on Kotkaniemi compared to another player that probably would fit the mold a bit better, you know?
Right. Well, the problem being that, you know, that other player doesn't play for the Canadiens. That other player doesn't play for the team that tried to offer sheet my number one center 2 years ago. I mean, that's the element of this from the Carolina Hurricanes perspective, that you can't account for that. Like there's no, you can't find the logic in it, because the logic is very simple. It's that they just wanted to get back at the Canadiens for that. And they made no effort to hide it. It's really
no. I mean, they did. I mean, marketing wise and in terms of messaging, they did a superb job, a master trolling job. Yeah. I mean, what did you think? They had like the Twitter announcement was made in French. For a while there, their Twitter account presented themselves as Le Compte Officiel des Hurricanes de la Caroline in French. The $20 signing bonus, the $15 at the end of the contract. Don Waddell using in the press release the exact same words that Marc Bergevin used 2 years ago. The whole thing is an incredible trolling job.
Oh no, that did not come together in the span of 24 hours. That whole social media campaign, everything about it, that took some time. And I'm gonna suggest, you know, maybe I'm telling secrets out of school, but you know those quotes and press releases aren't actually what the GM said, right? Like it's do people know that? Because now we have the proof. Like Don Waddell no one went up to Don Waddell and said, so why are you giving Kotkaniemi this offer sheet? And then he just came out with the almost verbatim quote that Marc Bergevin gave in 2019, which was an actual quote that he gave, that he actually said in a press conference. So next time you read a press release and you see, you know, Marc Bergevin said, you know.
Yeah.
Make sure you take that with a grain of
salt. Mark Bergevin agreed to say, you know.
Yes, somebody, Mark Bergevin approved for this press release.
So, I'm Mark Bergevin and I approve this message.
Yes, exactly. So it's so in this case, you know, and that's, so that's, again, so that's a whole different part of this from the Carolina Hurricanes' point of view. Yes, I agree. Jesperi Kotkaniemi is not the player that perfectly fits their needs, but he's a good player. You know, and they are a team that has, you know, a very heavy analytic bent. Eric Tulski has a lot of sway in that front office and has done a really excellent job in terms of guiding a lot of the decisions they've made in the hockey operations department.
He's going to be a GM one day.
He will be. I wouldn't be surprised. And so what I also wouldn't be surprised is that group, you know, that group of people looked at Kotkaniemi's rookie season where he had, you know, incredible, you know, possession metrics and everything you look at as an analytic person in hockey. Kotkaniemi was so good in his rookie year that some people in the analytics community were touting his candidacy for the Selke Trophy. I mean, it was ridiculous, but that's how good his numbers were, you know? And there are all sorts of factors why his numbers were that good that year. You know, he played sheltered minutes. He had defensively responsible line mates, usually played with Lekkonen and Armia that year, if I remember correctly. And so had two guys who could really help him away from the puck, but he played well. He had a good, very good rookie season up until January, February, was a very effective player for the Canadiens. And so it wouldn't surprise me if the Hurricanes looked at that sample and then looked at everything that came after as being sort of the result of everything we've been talking about, injuries, you know, pressures of Montreal, the expectations not being, everything that we've talked about that resulted in what seems to be a deterioration of the relationship. If Caroline decided to not look at that stuff and say, okay, well, that player who at 18 years old did this from October to January in his first NHL season, we can do something with that player. Like, that's the only hockey-related logic I can see coming from Carolina's point of view.
They have to like the player. They have to like him. I mean, it's not...
No, I know, but
it
doesn't
be solely based on revenge. I mean, it was fueled by it, but it cannot be the only thing. There has to be a hockey component to it, too.
So that's from their point of view, that's the only way I see the logic of it, because it's not easy. Like, it's not easy to see the logic of it. You know, there's nothing that Kotkaniemi has done over the last 2 years that would warrant this kind of a thing. It's sort of a perfect storm of a player in Kotkaniemi's position on the team he's on, and the fact that the Carolina Hurricanes absolutely wanted to offer sheet a player from that team. And, you know, the funny part is that, you know, Don Waddell's quote said, you know, we saw a vulnerable player or whatever it was, which is a direct quote from Mark Bergevin 2 years ago. That's what Kotkaniemi was. He was, the Canadiens were vulnerable when it came to Kotkaniemi because seemingly the relationship had soured. There were trust issues. There were all sorts of issues in terms of how Kotkaniemi's career was going from both sides, I would imagine. And so they decided to pounce. Like, it really worked perfectly for them, even though the contract itself is a big risk on their part. And we're going to have to see how that turns out. But, you know, it was funny when you mentioned the North-South part of it. I just want to, because, like, it's a joke that Kotkaniemi made to me a while ago when I talked about, he was saying something, he said something where I was like, hey, look at you, you know, you sound like an NHL veteran right now. You've been here a while. He's like, yeah, I've gotten some pucks deep in this league, and then walked away. It was like,
yeah, that's
he
it.
He said it, it was a joke, but it was kind of like, you know, like I sat there and I was like, yeah, I get it. You know, like that's what he's asked to do. And I don't think he found it all that inspiring. Like he thought he was pretty proud of himself for the joke. It was funny, but you know, there's always a little bit of truth in every joke, right?
Yeah, for sure.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
For sure. But now, listen, let's say Kotkaniemi leaves for Carolina. The Canadians take the pick. The picks, should I say. What now? I mean, does it bring the Canadians even more into a transitional year? You know, they're not going to have Shea Weber this year. They've lost Philippe Danault, and for now, they're replacing him with Cédric Paquette. They have an uncertain situation throughout their lineup. But do you see that situation as probably scaling down the expectations for this year and say, you know what, why don't we use that in order to perhaps take a step back so that we can make two steps forward the season after?
You know, and I am going to write something on this at some point, but I do think that that's something that the Canadians should consider doing. And this would only solidify that, you know, a little while back we did we did projections. We did several actually, but we did projections of what this team would look like, you know, last season, this season and next season. And this coming season, the 2021-22 season, in those projections was always a step back year. It was always like, okay, this is the year where Suzuki and Kotkaniemi are given the keys and the Canadians take a little step back. You know, maybe Dano's gone, maybe Petrie's gone, maybe Gallagher's gone. Like, who knows? Maybe Tatar's gone. Like, this offseason was always going to be a breaking point of some sort where the Canadians were going to go in a different direction. And it was foreseeable years ago. We foresaw it. I'm sure the Canadians themselves foresaw it. So there is something to be said to just accepting that and owning it and being like, okay, well, this is a year where we're going to do that and we're going to let our kids develop and get some experience so that next year and the year after, this becomes their team. Two problems with that. One being the Canadians reaching the Stanley Cup final. It's much harder to make that decision when you do that. It's you know, that creates expectations, even though the expectations on the Canadians are not all that high right now. I don't think there's that many people who think the Canadians are a slam dunk to even make the playoffs, let alone go deep in the playoffs. Everyone acknowledges it's going to be very difficult for them to make the playoffs and will take a series of things going right for them. And then the other aspect is Marc Bergevin's contract situation. You know, he's entering the last year of his contract. He's made it clear he's not going to sign an extension until whenever, maybe never. So does he want his last year under contract to be like a mini retool year or a year, a transition year, let's call it? Yeah. Is that something that he really wants? You know, I think he's always maintained, and I think he's always actually held up what he said, that, you know, the long-term future of the Canadians is what's important to him. But I agree with your point, is that the long-term future of the Canadians, it might be, the step back might be what they need for their long-term future. You know, the step back means giving kids playing time, letting them play and getting experience so that they'll be better players in the future. And Kotkaniemi could be one of those players, or could have been one of those players had this not happened. But, you know, I firmly believe that that's what this season should be about, especially after the Weber news, especially after Danault leaving. And now with Kotkaniemi perhaps out the door, would only strengthen that view.
Yeah. The thing is, though, is that, yes, it would you know, taking a step back in order for Suzuki to take a more prominent role, to Caulfield to get, you know, even more acclimated to the NHL and taking a significant role too. Maybe another year before Romanov becomes a top 40. But beyond those three guys, and okay, fine, you can add Paling and even hope that the next season would help a younger prospect to maybe setting himself ready for being a rookie next season. But apart from that, this is a team that's not so young. In terms of quantity of players, do they really have the luxury of saying, you know what, it might be an off year despite the fact that we've got Gallagher, we've got Hoffman, Toffoli, Paquette, Perrault, Petrie, Sherratt, who's in the last year of his deal, Savard, who's 30 years old, just being signed. You know, it's not... And among everybody, Carey Price, you know, who's now 34 years old and for whom every season counts. So for all those players who are seasoned veterans, can you allow yourself as an organization to say, we're going to take one step back in order to make two steps forward next year? It's tricky because on the one hand, that small number of younger players are the ones that are meant to rejuvenate and let your team enter a new cycle. But the vast majority of players are not there, are at a different point in their development and their career path.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's actually a great point because, you know, I don't think Tyler Toffoli didn't sign there to be part of like a mini retool. You know, Carey Price only has so many years left on his effectiveness, let alone, you know, he has many years left on his contract, but you know, there's only so many years where he's going to be, you know, the type of goalie we saw in the playoffs last year. And he might already be there because of the way we saw Carey Price play in the regular season last year and the year before and the year before that. So there are, you know, there are other pressures on this team to perform. But the fact is that, you know, I think for those guys that you mentioned in particular, those four guys, Suzuki, Kotkaniemi, Caulfield, Romanov, that this year could have been for them. Like the transition year would not be like an overall transition. It would just be like for them to transition into a more prominent role, the Canadiens would have had to live with some of the difficulties that come with that, you know? And I think that's something that those players that we just mentioned would accept because it would mean that, well, first of all, they're good players. And so it's not as if you're throwing bad players out there on the ice and not, you know, and totally hindering the team's ability to win right now. But more importantly, next season, like in 2022-23, you would have to believe that like Suzuki, Kotkaniemi, Caulfield, Romanov would all be in a position to be prominent guys on a team that mixed in with all those veterans you mentioned, you know, throw a Josh Anderson in there, you know, even Jonathan Drouin, we'll see what happens with him. But I mean, you know, there's a lot of guys in that age range.
Yeah.
The Gallagher, Drouin, Anderson, Toffoli range. Edmondson, you can even throw in there, or Sherratt, who I don't think they would, you know, they would look at Kotkaniemi getting more of a role, Suzuki obviously taking on a bigger role, even though, well, or the role that he had in the playoffs, basically. But Caulfield getting that time, Romanov getting a top four role eventually. Like, I don't know if they would look at that as necessarily a bad thing. So it's, but without Kotkaniemi, like, that's the thing, is that without Kotkaniemi, it changes a lot of that. Like, it's, you know, when Marc Bergevin said after the playoffs, the bubble playoffs, that, you know, Nick Suzuki and Jesperi Kotkaniemi showed that we can build our team around these two young centermen. And now one of those two young centermen might be gone. So that changes that plan drastically because he's not there, potentially,
no,
I should say.
No, that's it. And if it's status quo, you end up with a center line with Suzuki, Evans, Paquette, and probably Paling. So... Do you keep the status quo, or you're Bergevin being a competitive guy, he's not going to sit there and say, you know, we're going to watch the boat sink for this season slowly from day one. My guess is that he's going to turn around and try to make a move, probably maybe a splash, who knows. But I don't know. There might be an acquisition that would make all those considerations moot, because that other move could very well position the Canadians as a team trying to be as competitive as possible this year, and ignoring completely that step back possibility.
Yeah, and that's what the extra first round pick provides as mm-hmm. a possibility. And so that's definitely what, you know, I haven't spoken to Marc Bergevin, but I am very confident in saying that he is going to spend this week on the phone evaluating exactly how much that pick would be worth on the trade market. Either that pick or his own pick. Because frankly, if I'm a team looking to make a trade, I'm asking for the Canadiens' first round pick, not the Hurricanes' round pick. Even with everything we said about the Metropolitan Division, and I don't think it's a given that the Hurricanes even make the playoffs in the Metropolitan Division. It's going to be tough for them. You know, that value of that first round pick, Marc Bergevin needs to know specifically what it's worth, as in names, players, actual trades that need to be worked out with that pick or those picks involved by Saturday before this decision is made. But, you know, as of right now, sitting here today, I'd have to say I'd be pretty surprised if the Canadiens match this offer, and if Jesperi Kotkaniemi winds up back in Montreal in the fall. That would surprise me a great deal.
Yeah. So one thing's for sure, Kotkaniemi is going to play with Suzuki next season. It's just a matter of seeing if it's going to be Nick or Ryan.
That's so right. Exactly. Yes. Yeah.
So listen, we could have gone into the whole debate of Brady Tkachuk, but we've been on this podcast for an hour now, and it would easily take another hour to go through that tavern discussion. So let's leave it behind. Arpin, thank you so much. Let's see how it unfolds, and I suspect that we'll be back sooner than later on the Athletic Support to you know, first see the outcome of that, but also probably corresponding moves that might follow. So let's keep our eyes open for that. Thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in to the Athletic Support. I hope that you had a nice and short summer. And obviously, this offer sheet is officially the sign that our summer is over and we're back at it. So thank you so much for listening. And next time will be en français, Le Super Athletic. So thanks a lot. Thanks, Arpin.
Bye, everyone. Thank you.